This week on the Commander Clash podcast, we're talking about powerful cards that we refuse to play. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And this week, we got a fun topic. We're talking about some really powerful cards, but they're cards that we refuse to play for some reason or another. And joining me to do this, we got the small crew this week. Krim, off traveling in Singapore at the moment, and it's like 3 a.m. or something there, so we didn't wake him up from across the world. But I got Tomer and Phil here. How's it going, guys?
Hey,
doing well. I'm excited to get people angry in the comment section.
I mean, why
I'm going to name their
YouTube
favorite
video,
cards.
Tomer.
Yeah,
that's the whole point of this platform.
Yeah,
just infuriating your audience.
It's good engagement.
So today we're talking about powerful cards we refuse to play, and it should be a pretty interesting one. But before we get into it, we got a couple of sponsors today. Our show is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put it back in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and you can head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGGoldfish to get 15% off. Our show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use our curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more, and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use our sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time, well, it would be time, for the comment of the week, but we got to skip the comment of the week this week because we messed up our recording schedule a little bit. But don't worry, it's going to be back in the future. So let's talk about powerful cards we refuse to play. And I think this topic's interesting because intuitively, I'd be like, well, if they're powerful, why are you refusing to play them? So before we get to these cards, why would you refuse to play powerful cards, Phil or Tomer? Why even do this at all?
For me, it's actual cards that I have decks for, and that would be the best card in the deck. And I'm not playing them because sometimes it's too much. And I guess that's the way to describe it.
I mean, I think you generally want to be picking decks and cards in your deck to suit whatever your personal play group is. So for me, speaking just like the places that I play with one regular play group in France. I have like multiples in Canada. Here in France, I have one play group that we play in together often, and then also I play regularly most often at my local game store with like randoms and stuff. And typically that's like bracket 3 and bracket 2 and occasionally bracket 4. So typically I just run cards that like if there's a card that like a little bit too much for bracket 3, bracket 2, or my play group or my regular play group finds like certain cards unfun, then I try to avoid them. It's not saying that these cards are necessarily bad for the format or you should be you're a bad person, but it's like I want to make sure that my personal play group is having a fun time, and maybe some cards, you know, lead to bad experiences in our personal groups. And that's the cards that I avoid. But what about you, Phil?
Sorry. It's cards that I don't want to oppress my friends with, kind of.
Yeah, for me, I think it's really, there's a couple of reasons that a powerful card would be a card that I wouldn't want to play. Some of them I just personally find to be like kind of boring or anticlimactic or unfun for whatever reason. So that's one of the biggest ones. I think a lot of them are cards that I feel like bring the game to what I see as a not as satisfying as I'd like it to be conclusion. And then there's also some cards that I don't like because I feel like they kind of wreck one person. And when I think of the commander format, one of my goals, unlike 1v1, where my goal is to have all the fun and make my opponents as miserable as possible, when I play commander, I want everyone to have a good time. So there's certain cards that I think are acceptable, but I just choose not to play them because I feel like it worsens the experience at the table for everyone, even if it's going to help me win more. And that's just not what commander is about for me. It isn't about winning as much as possible. It's about having as much fun with everyone as possible. So let's get to some of these cards and let's start with... Oh, go ahead, Tomer.
I was going to say, are you saying that Commander's a casual format?
Yeah. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? Casual format Commander, indeed. Well, let's get to some of the cards and let's start with Tomer because I think you got some hot takes on your list here, Tomer. Let's start with you. What's a powerful card that you refuse to play?
All right. This is actually a strange one because we did this topic like years ago. And I thought surely years ago I would have brought this card up because this is like the one that I actually just straight up avoid in like 99% of my decks. And we didn't mention it before. So I'm mentioning it now. Sol Ring. You all know Sol Ring. I'm not going to read the card out to you. It shows up in every single... It's the most played card in the entire format. It shows up in every single precon as the first card. It's the first card in every deck. So you put 98 other cards in your 99 library. I don't run this because I find that these soul rings kind of lead to worse game experiences. They don't feel oppressive. It's a very interesting thing. There's like a psychology behind like cards that feel bad. Soul ring doesn't feel bad because it's not stopping people from playing the game, but it kind of does in a more socially acceptable way. My experience with soul ring is if it shows up turn one, somebody runs away with the game. And the more powerful the deck, the faster they can snowball and run away with the game. And as power creep continues to power creep, basically every single deck is getting stronger and Sol Ring starts are getting more powerful. And they get their engine online two turns faster than they normally would, you know? And then they can snowball out of control like as early as like turn two, turn three, especially if you go like Sol Ring, it's an arcane signet. That's like obviously the dream. And then the rest of the table has to play arch enemy with that person. And then either the rest of the table has the answer and the Sol Ring player is shut down, could happen. Or the Sol Ring player just, you know, powers through and wins the game, you know, relatively resistance three by turn seven or eight, it's over. But like they've been crushing the table the entire way through. I don't like both those scenarios. I feel like it's a net negative in terms of fun. I don't generally find Sol Ring games to be that fun, and they just kind of lead to a lot of non-games more often than not. We got rid of it on Commander Clash, and one of my Canadian playgroups, when I started playing with them, I had Sol Rings in all my decks. And they're like, I sat down when I was playing with them the first couple of times. They're like, oh, no, we don't play with Sol Ring, actually. Mm-hmm. Like, you can play with it. We're not gonna like put a ban on your cards or whatever. But we just don't personally do it. And then I was like, oh, okay. And then I took them out of my own decks, and they were more fun. It was just more fun, less non-games, and I liked it. So.
I gotta ask you, I'm curious. So I feel the same way about Sol Ring as you do, where it leads to those two outcomes if you have it early. Neither one of those, I think, are especially a good outcome or entertaining outcome for the game. But I'm curious, the one place I struggle with this, so I don't play them in my Clash decks, but the decks I bring to Magic Cons, I usually have Sol Ring in, because I assume everyone's going to be playing with Sol Ring, right? So, like, if everyone's playing with Sol Ring, I feel like, well, I might as well because everyone's doing it anyway, so why would I be the one that's not playing it if everyone else at the table is playing it? Do you do that or no? Do you, like, your con decks and stuff, are you just hard no, like, even with those decks, are you hard no on Sol Rings?
My decks work just fine without it. I will run in a bracket four, though.
Right.
Like, my cloud deck, which is, it still runs Cauldre. That's why it's not CDH or anything. But it runs a Cauldre pieces. But I'm running Sol Ring in that. And I think I'm going to try and make another bracket four deck that isn't just cloud. And now we'll have Sol Ring in it too. But literally all my other decks, like 18 other decks, no Sol Ring, never missed it. Don't care for it.
It kind of makes sense, right? If you don't play it, you just don't have a Sol Ring start.
There's like, just less non-games.
This morning, like, yeah. So the way I do it is I play it in all my paper decks. Obviously, Clash, I don't. And it makes sense in Clash because it leads to non-games. I think this is just objectively a thing. But this morning, I played a round of Commander and I had a Sol Ring in my opening hand. And I did the Not Today and showed it and put it under my library, drew another card. Whoa. So I guess you can just do the, do you feel like steamrolling or get some brownie points for going, oh, this guy, he didn't want you. And then maybe you get some good bonuses. Or maybe another person says, I have the Sol Ring. I guess I'm mulligan mine as well. Because on turn four or something, it's incredibly good, but it's way more fun, I think. Then it's like a little ritual, and then the other turns, I think it's the relation, I mean, obviously, of turns and lands you have, and then the Sol Ring gets way more chill if it's like four lands and a Sol Ring. That's just a couple of nature's laws.
But no one would ever play Sol Ring before like turn five, I'd be fine with it. I think it really is the like the first turn of the game, really, or first two-ish, three-ish turns of the game. That's where it has that big negative impact where it can lead to the arch enemy games and all that. Later in the game, it'd be fine, but there's just no way to really enforce. I guess you could do it with your play group and just honor system. If you have a Sol Ring, put it to the bottom and like don't play it. But there's not really any way to enforce that with the rules. So I guess the only choice is just not to play it altogether. But and let's move on to the next one. Phil, what do you got as a powerful card that you don't play?
Okay, so my card is, I think, way less controversial because everybody who played against it knows what I mean if I say it's way too oppressive in the right decks, and that is Grave Pact and similar effects. Oh, unless you play, so let me read this first. Four mana, enchantment, very black, so a triple black and no colorless. Whenever any creature you control is put into, whenever any creature you control dies, each opponent has to sacrifice a creature, and I could put it into my Jadar deck and have a dying zombie at least every turn, and then everybody has to edict every turn, and then at some point nobody has creatures anymore but me, and then if they play creature, I make them sack it. I do, however, play the, there's a 7-mana creature that does this that I think is fair, and the new Super Void or something that exiles creatures, and then when no creature is on the board, it sacrifices your reanimated creature, and that's fine because the bad game state is you have a game state like a Grave Pact, then you can sacrifice on command and nobody can cast anything anymore, and that is very boring and oppressive, and that's why I don't want to do this to my friends. It's honestly nobody. That is it's a little too much.
This is an interesting one because I remember we were talking about what was the podcast that we did? And we were mentioning like Aura Shards and stuff like that.
Don't play these cards.
Don't play these cards. And I remember one of the top comments was like, I can't believe they didn't mention Grave Pact. And I'm like, oh yeah, I totally forgot to mention Grave Pact. Because I also like leave it out of so many decks that I don't even consider it an option. But yeah, like it definitely is. It could be a frustrating game experience where you wipe the board and then everybody else is like, we just can't play creatures until somebody finds an enchantment removal spell. And like,
enchantments are really like horror shots,
it can be relatively difficult to get rid of, like, especially if you're like in a red deck. It's like, okay, I have a couple answers in my deck, but like, you know, you still have to find them. And black has a couple answers too, but not that many, especially not many that are very good, like two. And if you need your creatures to like draw your cards or find those specific answers, it can be quite a frustrating experience. So totally agree with you on Grave Pact.
I actually have kind of a different take on Grave Pact. I feel like Grave Pact, if you just play it Crim style, where it's like, I'm just going to jam this to like mess with the board, then I find it annoying. Mm. But if I'm playing like an actual sack deck, I think it's justifiable as like a synergy piece, right? If like, if the theme of your deck is like sacking stuff.
Just have synergy.
it's now more annoying, right? Because now you actually built around the effects. So,
right, yeah.
So now it's even more powerful and oppressive.
Even more powerful and oppressive. Yes, that's
Smoking Tide. Okay. It's fine if you synergize with tokens, then it's, then it's fine.
It's like, One Ring is fine. It's more synergistic because I have all these ways of untapping it. And I'm an artifact deck.
But it's
like, okay, yeah, yeah. I agree.
I sack a creature, you all sack. It seems symmetrical and fair, right? I sack a creature, you all sack a creature. Yeah. So
that's,
I don't know.
Not like primary archetype is sacrifice or anything. They have to really go out of their way.
For me, this is more a card that like I don't play often rather than a card I full on refuse to play. Like there are sack decks where I still play Grave Packs. I play them less than I used to like a decade ago when I first started playing Commander heavily. So I play them less than I used to, but it's more of like I try not to use it that much rather than like I will never play this card.
I think it's fine at higher powers, but like I wouldn't play it at my game store that much.
I do see how it can be very miserable. What's that enchantment Crim plays where it just like spreading plague or whatever that just blows up all the creatures every time, like stuff like that. Oh my God. Those cards I actually straight up refuse to play under any circumstances. But
are there any Grave Pact effects that you find okay, Phil? I know Seth is like, well, team Grave Pact is good.
Yeah, I mean,
but
the...
would you run this with Thera?
Let me see. I do run Soul Pharaoh. Let me just check my deck here real quick. I play the 4-drop Soul Pharaoh, the Super Void, I think. And then the 7-drop is Butcher of Malakir, just a rare from Zendikar that has the same effect, but
think,
it is a creature. It's way easier to deal with.
I think being on a creature is much easier to answer, Yeah, right, I think that's what I agree with, too.
Let's move on to my first pick. And this is a card I refuse to play for kind of a bunch of different reasons. The Soul Stone. The Soul Stone from the Spider-Man set. It's a 3-mana or a 2-mana black Infinity Stone mana rock. Indestructible, makes a black mana. You can pay 7 to harness Infinity and exile a creature you control. And then once you harness Infinity, at the beginning of your upkeep, you can reanimate a creature from your graveyard. So the Soul Stone. The reason I don't play this card is I feel like this card, well, I feel like it's unnecessary. I feel like it's unnecessary. It feels a little forced to me where it was like kind of along the Arcane Signet lines, another card that I don't play as often as most people, where it feels to me to just like designed to always show up in a slot in your commander deck. And it's just like not necessary. It's $65. It's super expensive. It's basically doing a mana rock thing. So even when
$5? What the
hell? Yeah, I checked when I saw the list as well. Didn't drop a penny.
Yeah, even when I'm a mono black deck, where in theory this would be a good card in my deck, I'm just like, I'll just play a Mind Stone. It's like a dollar, and it's like 95% is good. But I'm curious what you think about how price plays into this. Am I the only one that like has cards I refuse to play, at least in large part, because they're very expensive and they just seem kind of replaceable?
Yes, but I can't think of anything else because I also thought of the Soulstone
like Abuduals,
because of this. I guess Abuduals, although
Abuduals is kind of like
even
that.
Another
that's
one.
Very expensive.
I don't care about like the price. Like if I'm choosing cards, if I have them, then I don't really care about the price of them so much. But I really dislike the fact that they printed this at Mythic. And it's a $65 card. And the way it was handled, I really don't like this. I don't like this at all. I feel like this card probably like it is an upgrade. It is very strong in like black heavy decks. And we had a whole podcast about it, so I'm not gonna harp on it too much. I don't think it's like super powerful or anything, or overpowered or like game warping or anything like that. But yeah, I don't agree with how they handled it. Would I run it if I had it? Maybe, but like, probably.
Are you
going to
go out and buy
like,
it, Tomer?
No,
are you going to go spend $65?
I don't think it's worth $65. Yeah. But I really don't like that. I really, really dislike the fact that they printed this card, designed it as a mythic, and really kept down the supply of this card too, which is
it is kind of like a card where they said this got to be super playable, so we just power creep something generically we just make a staple and like we just copy a staple and put like a little bit of indestructible and like a niche upside that is it's just gravy. That's all you got. It's like they print a soul ring but it enters tapped or taps for 1 mana. It's like, that's still super playable. I don't know. Oh, like even power.
I don't even think it's that good. It's like, I think it's good, but it's
fine.
Good enough
that
I would probably put it in every single black deck and not think about it too much.
If I had
but
10
also
of them,
not like,
I would play them in all my decks that I'm black.
I don't think people would be like, alert, alert, when you play it, you know?
It's
just like,
it It's kind of funny, like a lot of the same issues that I have with it now would be there even if it didn't do the reanimation hardness of anything. Like even if it was just an indestructible 2-mana tap for black untap mana rock, I'd be like, why do you just make this staple that's the best thing in its slot for every black deck if you want a mana rock? Like it just seems it just seems unnecessary. So I just kind of avoid it. No shade to anyone who does like their soul stones. I don't think there's anything wrong with playing it. It just seems silly to me to spend $65 on a slightly upgraded Mind Stone for a black deck. So
I'd run it. I just do not appreciate the design philosophy behind it.
I feel like we're gonna have this happen more and more in the Universes Beyond era because there's gonna be these like iconic flavor cards from the other IPs, and they're gonna be like, oh, they need to be like really strong and they need to be at Mythic, and then you end up with $65 Mind Stones, which
and kind of Sephiroth, right?
Or Sephiroth, like Sephiroth, Badgermal Cub, Vivi. There's kind of a long list already, but anyway,
they didn't have to make Badgermal Cub. Like nobody's like, oh my god, I'm such a big Avatar fan. I really hope that the Badgermal Cub
you don't love
is
the
super Badgermal? Powerful.
At least this
I
one's
love
interesting,
them, but it's then, not like I don't know. I don't know. People would be like, I don't know. I thought maybe
it's
like,
not like Vivi or Sephiroth or something. Yeah.
Or like but when even, they like, get maybe Korra this... out, they'd be like, I need Korra to be really strong. I get that, but it's like Badgermal Cub. Like okay.
Yeah,
at least Vivi and Badgermal Cup do something unique. Like Sephiroth is just a, I guess it has
this
something
one's
unique
got, like,
that it's,
exile,
it flips
like,
into an emblem, and
it's
but
like,
it's just super glorified.
This one seems like it's some. I watched the movie, and they were like, you have to sacrifice something to get the Soul Stone or use its powers or something like that. So like, I get. Like it feels a little bit flavorful, right? Like so.
But
the
it's
context,
a mana rock.
The context is like to for Thanos, the evil bad guy, to get the Soul Stone. He needs all of them. He's gonna catch them all. He has to sacrifice like someone he loves, to get it. So this one is you have to exile a creature to harness it. So it's like I get it. I think it's like that's kind of unique in a way, but it's just like it's a little bit. It's still a little bit too vanilla for me. I don't know.
Meh. Well, let's see what else is too vanilla for Tomer. Tomer, we're back to you. What's a powerful card you refuse to play?
Okay, I'm just going to say it now because people are going to be like, oh, Tomer needs to... Why didn't Tomer break up this card? But I've already brought it up before and I don't want to make the podcast me complaining about some card over and over again. So I'm just going to say Rhystic Study is a card I avoid unless I'm bracket... Like, unless I'm CDH. I don't even have it in my bracket four decks. But CDH, I don't like it. But the other one that I've kind of avoided, and I don't know, I want to hear your guys' opinion on this one. Insurrection. Insurrection is an 8-mana red sorcery that says untap all creatures and gain control of them until end of turn. They gain haste until end of turn. I have fond memories of this card because when I started playing Commander, I was introduced to Commander with the first precons, the first round of precons, and mine was Political Puppets. That's the Zedra precon, and it was a horrible precon. It was like just from the top to the bottom, it had some cool ideas, but the execution was terrible. You could barely cast your spells or anything. And of the cycle, I think the Political Puppets was just like the weakest. It was just. It was hard to cast your spells. Your commander was very mana intensive and you just didn't have any mana to do anything. And I remember the way I would win is basically I would dirtle. I would do nothing and people would kind of leave me alone because the Political Puppets deck is tripping on itself. And then my only hopes, there were two cards that were like, sometimes I can steal one, was Reigns in Power, which is like a mini Insurrection. But the big dog was Insurrection, where it's like, all right, people are hitting each other left or right. I've survived until the late game because people pitied me. Insurrection, steal all y'all's creatures and kill everybody. And I don't know, that felt pretty anticlimactic for me because it didn't really feel like I built around it or anything. And it felt like just like the game just ended because I had a sorcery and you couldn't really interact with it that much. And then I put it in a threatened deck where the whole point was like to steal creatures and then sacrifice them. But then I was just killing people without even doing the sacrifice bit. So I was like, well, I don't know. Like I don't have anything wrong about this card. It can be an old border foil, which is gorgeous, and that always makes me biased. And I have nostalgic feelings for this card. And maybe it is okay these days, but I don't know. I've had a lot of games just end. I didn't do anything. I have no board state, nothing. I get to 8 mana, and you guys have a board state, and I just cast this 8 mana spell, and oops, I win. And I don't know. It felt... I just stopped playing it after that, but I haven't played it in a while. So what do you guys...
Yeah,
have you not guys
in
seen
a
this card?
Long while, because yeah. I started playing Commander with Goldfish. Like my first Clash episode was my first game of Commander. And even then, it was like, oh, Insurrection is boring. Just like kind of Kratos, although this is kind of making a comeback to me, because at least it... Yeah. I don't know.
Me and too, actually.
It ends the game, so I'm kind of like, hey, fine.
That's why I'm thinking, like, is this okay now? Like,
yeah, with Insurrection, it feels a little less deserved, because at least with Kratos, it's your creatures and you do the big overrun. With Insurrection, it's like, hey, thanks for casting creatures. They're mine now. That's it. Unless, I think we played like OG pre-cons or something, there might have been an episode on Clash where it ended this way, but certainly because it was part of this theme, because when I started years ago, it was already, I don't know, nobody plays Insurrection anymore. Kind of like Expropriate as well.
Expropriate should be on this list for me. I hate Expropriate. I think Insurrection... I still don't play it. This is a card that for a long time I felt exactly the same as Phil's describing, and Tomer. It's just like not a very satisfying way for the game to end. It feels like you can do the least at the table and end up winning the game, which just feels weird to me. Like, I feel like you should be doing more if you're going to end up winning the game. Although, even though I still don't play it, I do think it's gotten less offensive as Wizards has tried to unban these expensive spells. We've seen Coalition Victory, mm-hmm. we've seen Worldfire, we've seen Biorhythm. So it seems like the message and what the format's about is like, if you're going to be 8 mana-ish and you just like win the game, that's okay. And that's what we want Commander to be about. So in a world where we have all these other win the game 8 mana cards, I feel like Insurrection doesn't offend me as much as it did like 10 years ago. But I still don't put in any of my decks because I personally find it a boring way to win the game.
Also, by the way, as an update, because everybody was memeing about Biorhythm, like, oh my god, why is this terrible card on the ban list? I've played with it and against it a couple times now. It's legit. Like, it actually just kills people. And I don't think it deserves to be banned, but like, it is, people think this card, like, Biorhythm is weak. And I have seen firsthand, at least in bracket 3 tables, where like there's so many times where like you just kill people, and it's like, yes, okay, I could have just cast a Crater Hoof and stuff, but there's sometimes like I killed somebody through a constant miss and they were just like, I don't have any creatures on the board, but like I was like, I don't care, I buy a rhythm, you're dead, like it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, I guess. So I don't know if the episode is out when this is out. I don't think so. But I was filling in on Clash recently, and I had a Biorhythm in hand, and I didn't cast it, but if I dared to cast it through possible counters and whatever, no spoilers, it might have won the game, or at least had huge impact. So, yeah, I mean, it's still just the thing on the text box.
It might show up on our, if we do this podcast topic, we might put Biorhythm there, I don't know. But like I like the card. I'm still dabbling with it. So
it's way better than like Coalition Victory or Worldfire. Yeah. I think it's way more impactful than the other expensive cards they've unbanned so far. I have
way
also
to pull off.
Been impressed with it. Yeah, it actually is powerful. I can also see some argument that we want the game to end. We want it to end in a satisfying way, but I also like when games end in like an hour instead of 2 or 3 hours, and then you can play more games. So maybe there's an upside to getting Biorhythm and moving on to the next one in some cases. But let's go on to Phil. Phil, what's your next pick for a powerful card you refuse to play?
Okay, this one's kind of a Richard shout out because he had this. So a while ago, I couldn't find the conversation, but he posted this card in the group chat and said, wait, why don't we play this? This is insane. And then you took and kind of we all chimed in and said, oh yeah, right, this card, that exists, but that's just way too easy. And that is Defense of the Heart. It is 4 mana. During your upkeep, if one of your opponents controls 3 or more creatures, sacrifice this 4 mana enchantment, search your library for up to 2 creature cards, put them into play, then shuffle your library. So As long as anybody is three creatures, which either they have or you put them in a very, very bad situation, so just psychologically, it's just very unfun. If you're the one cast your three creatures and then, oh, here's a Crater Hoof and like an Itali. And I paid four mana and did nothing for this. This is just such super easy mode right on the battlefield. The super feel bads from the opponents being the reason you got this, even though the reason is a not designed for commander cards, designed 1999. So they had, it's not even their fault.
Yeah.
But my God, it's too easy.
This is a funny and one that I actually disagree with.
Kiki combos. Like, I think if you get a Kiki combo with this or something that ends the game, it's like, okay, we're bracket four or something here, but at least it's over. Maybe the Crater Hoof is fine then if it kills. If you play this for value, I think that's the bad part.
I think it's fine, actually. Like, I've seen this a lot. It was very popular in the earlier days of Commander. And the way I've always seen this play out is if you just like jam out of the Fence of the Heart, either A, like you don't trigger it because
people don't
have three cards, but B, more likely you're playing it into a bunch of creatures and they're like, hey, this is going to be a huge problem. On his upkeep, he could win the game. Everybody, let's attack that Defense of the Heart player. And then you get wrecked. Or
so
the
good is bad,
But it's not so good.
It's kind of true.
It's kind of like throwing down like a Felidar Sovereign or something. You just play it like a Felidar Sovereign main phase on your turn, and then you're like, I'll win next turn, deal with it. It's like, well, yeah, we're gonna have to deal with it. That's why I never felt like Felidar or like Test of Endurance is actually a big deal, because it's just like, if you're not playing at an instant speed, it's fine. You know, if you're playing at instant speed, then you've taken an extra hoop to do it. You know,
there's some argument that if like you can't deal with, if the entire table can't deal with it or getting around the table, that like maybe you deserve to lose to it. I think like you have three people that have a shot to like interact with this thing that you play during your turn. I do think this card's kind of annoying though, right? Because I think one of two things happens. Either you never trigger it or get murdered for playing it, which isn't especially fun for you, or it pops off and you get some combo and win the game, and it's not an especially satisfying ending anyway. So it's a card I choose not to play, not necessarily because I think it's too good, but I think that its ceiling is incredibly high and its floor is really low. And I don't really enjoy the ceiling or the floor experience with this card. This isn't a card that's ever just going to be fair and lead to like an interesting, you know, ongoing game of Magic. It's either going to win you the game or it's going to do nothing. So I just don't play it for that reason.
It's a good way to look at it, yeah.
I think it's kind of interesting. I don't know.
I guess there's a little.
I feel like people just don't kind of think it's worth it these days. Honestly, that's why.
Because
like, I mean, tooth and nails right there, right? Like, is it not just easier to make
eight mana?
Was it eight? Is it
I think
eight
it's
mana or nine mana?
With Entwine, yeah.
Is it not just easier to make nine mana and win the game on the spot off a sorcery than it is to play a four mana enchantment that you have to wait a turn cycle?
You
can
turn two, you play like, oh, maybe you don't play. You can play it turn three if the opponent
goes.
You
play turn
three,
who has three creatures?
Yeah, that is true. Let's say you play turn four, and then maybe nobody has a reclamation sage or something.
If they can't deal with you and they don't have a disenchant, they still have creatures, and then they could just, you know, like if one person has three creatures on the battlefield.
But that makes like Trouble Impair, Smothering Tide, Grave Pact, all the four mana enchantments that we say, well, that's crazy. I guess that, yeah, Smothering Tide or something gets you a treasure. But if you say, well, if you can't remove this four mana enchantment right away, maybe you deserve to lose.
You remove creatures. Yeah. Like, there's still play around potential, is what I mean. It's like if somebody has three creatures, you could be like, okay, I'll sacrifice this one creature so that this doesn't trigger. And then we continue just bullying the defense person. I don't know. maybe I'm off base. I don't see it that often these days, to be fair.
You put yourself in a bad situation if you cast it as well. That is very true. Like if they trigger, they have three creatures, so they have three creatures to attack you, so maybe make sure you have,
that's what I think,
other defenses than just Defense of the Heart if you cast it.
It might be a pillow fort or something.
Good as defense as his name suggests. All right, let's move on to my next pick, and this card I don't know. I think people might get upset about this one. I don't know. Mana Geyser. I freaking hate Mana Geyser, man. This card, it's so... okay. So here's... Let me go on a little Mana Geyser. So Mana Geyser is 5 mana. It's a sorcery. It makes red mana for each tap land your opponent's control, which usually means this is 5 mana make, I don't know, 20 mana, 30 mana, some huge amount of mana in the late game. And here's my problem with Mana Geyser. So I know that red needs a way to actually win the game, and it's a spell, and that kind of works with red spell slinging, so I can see the arguments for this card. My issue with this card is two things. One is, I find it very anticlimactic. Just like, oh, you got 40 mana, of course you can win the game. I don't really, like, overshadows whatever else your deck was trying to do. The other thing I hate about this card, and maybe this is just an inherent problem with the color red in Commander, but it makes every red deck look the same. Like, if you're winning with Mana Geyser, so much of the time, and there was a Commander Clash season with Richard before he stopped doing Commander Clash, where he played a lot of red decks, and every other game that Richard won, it didn't matter what his commander was, what the theme of his deck was, it came down to some sort of, oh, I have Mana Geyser, and maybe an Underworld Breach, and I cast it a bunch of times, and then I like do a bunch of things, and I win the game. So it makes every deck, every red deck ends up being the same kind of finish, this like stormy, make a bunch of mana, have a big turn style finish, and it doesn't matter if you're a Zada deck or an actual Storm deck or a Spellslinger deck or an Aggro deck or a Goblin deck. Like, no matter what you're doing, it ends up feeling the same to me. So that's my issue with Mana Geyser, is it just makes every game feel like it plays out the same. And I don't want every game to... I play Commander because we're playing 100 singleton cards, so every game doesn't play out the same. But I'm curious what you guys think about this one. Like, have you had that experience at all? That it just, like, making red decks feel very samey if it ends up with the Mana Geyser win?
I'm checking my decks here.
I have thoughts.
I don't think I've ever played this card in any deck. It is weird because I should probably play it in my personal Maelstrom Wanderer deck. Because that needs big mana.
It's very powerful, yeah.
And I should. Maybe I played one and I just forgot about it, which means that I got one of my copies from a bulk collection into my Clash collection because before it got flooded. So maybe I actually have a copy flying around here and I should probably put it into my Maelstrom Wanderer deck. That's kind of a card I always forget. And it is kind of boring if somebody plays it. When I just checked my decks, even when I played the 5-drop tribal deck, for some reason this...
Still didn't play it?
No mana guys in here. That's got to be wrong. I don't know.
Well, it's also how many 5-drops you could play.
It is. Yeah, it's kind of...
You have to be a little bit more heavy, and you gotta be very red.
It's like red decks.
It is one of those cards that is not made for commander, like Sarah Ascendant or something. Yeah, 30 life guy. And so it feels like we're kind of cheating the system here.
Same, they printed Dockside, and that was made for Commander, so I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I can see them doing this again. I don't know.
What do you think on this, Domer? You heard my argument. What do you think on Mana Geyser?
So, I play a lot of red. I played a lot of Mana Geyser. I would suggest that this should be a game changer. I agree that it's a little bit too easy to generate so much game-winning amounts of mana off it. And again, I like powerful cards, but my favorite powerful cards, I feel like the power of a card should be kind of related to how much you've built around utilizing the card. Like, I'm okay with a card says you make 15 mana. If, like, I've played other cards that set up the 15 mana. It's like, oh, if you have, I don't know, 5 goblins, you make 2 red mana for each goblin you control. Well, there's literally a Brightstone Ritual, which does it. It makes a red for each goblin you control. I think that's like totally fine. Or like, you have to do something to get super powerful spells. I dislike cards that are just like, I give you the best possible thing, whatever it is, without you doing anything for it. Yeah. And Mana Geyser is probably the best possible ritual you could play in red, and it's not really dependent on you doing anything. It just, your opponents have to have tapped lanes, and that's just going to happen, you know, mid to late game. You're going to have like 15 mana. That said, I think this card is actually, like, as a game changer, I think it's absolutely fine. And red decks kind of need it. If you're like mono red, you kind of need this. You don't have a lot of mana options. And I did find it very funny. We had a commander clash that went up fairly recently. And I had an accusation from the table that I was playing Storm. I had mana geyser. There was a different reasoning. But like, I casted Mizzix's Mastery. And I think like Runaway Steamkin on the same turn. So I played Mizzix's Mastery. I casted like 8 spells. And I casted a Runaway Steamkin. And I passed the turn. It was Mizzix's Mastery. I casted like a bunch of like thrill possibilities. I played a Runaway Steamkin and then I passed. And they're like, oh no, it's Storm. The turn before that, Seth was like, I have Cabal Coffers tapping for like 13 mana. I have the other coffers, the fair coffers, tapping for about the same amount. Mm-hmm. Three Tree Village or whatever is Three Tree City, tapping for an insane amount of mana. He casted as many spells as me, if not more, and drew the same amount of cards. And he could do it every single turn just because he played a Cabal Coffers, you know? And, oh, I had an Urborgoth. So it's like, oh boy. And it's like, that's fine. That's chill. He had an Urborg. Of course it should tap for 15 mana each turn. It's fine. And but like, oh, Mana Geyser. Oh, no. Oh, the red decks. The red decks are all the same. If I had the gall of saying, oh, Cabal Coffers makes every black deck the same. It's like, obviously not. But Mana Geyser. Mana Geyser. It makes too much red. It's like, ah, get out of here. You guys just don't like Spellslinger.
You just have to accept that every red deck is a Storm deck, Tomer. If you're playing Mana Geyser, you are actually just a Storm deck.
And then every black deck that has Urborg is a Storm deck too, I guess, because you make too much mana.
The thing you mentioned, so Urborg and the tomb thing,
Yavmaya, yeah.
The two lands, the black, I don't know, I'm blanking on this right now, the black combo, two combo lands, that's the thing I don't play because it costs too much mana, because I should put it in a bunch of decks and like play at the 2 dice or something, it's too much, I don't know.
I think Mana Geyser should be, it could be a game changer. I can understand that maybe it's not a game changer because it's only playable like turn 6 or beyond, it gets really good.
It is a late even game if you cast like turn actually. Dark Ritual be a game changer first? It triples the mana you invest in it, and you can play it way earlier, which at this point you have way less mana available.
I feel like Mana Geyser usually wins the game off it, whereas Dark Ritual is just kind of like, it just ramps you into something. Faster. You're right. It does come out faster. Usually, whenever you see Mana Geyser, usually there's a big turn. You know, there's a big turn.
Yeah.
It's incredibly,
storm turn, perhaps.
Like Cabal Coffers tapping for mana past like turn 7. It's like, yes, storming off every single turn. Cabal Coffers, Urborg, Waka Waka. It's like, okay, fine. I don't know. That's my gripe is like, I think the way people generate,
that's a good point.
Yeah, the way people generate mana, like the certain cards, is a psychology thing. It's like when people get upset about being milled out, it's like, you can't really, I feel like it's not a rational argument. It's just like people don't like certain cards being done certain ways. But that's why I'm defending Mana Geyser here. I think it's a little bit too easy.
I got one and I'm going to put it in my deck, actually. I just always forget about it. Yeah. It's fine.
And then everybody's like, oh, Mono Red's the worst. And it's like, oh, well, can I play good cards to make my deck better? He's like, no. But let me tap my Urborg, my Cabal Coffers for 15 mana in all my black decks.
In some sense, I agree with you, Tomer, that it is true that you can storm up with Cabal Coffers and no one's going to think it's Storm because it just doesn't look like the cards people associate with Storm or the colors people associate with Storm. So I think that is very true. On the other hand, in that game we're talking about, from the perspective of the rest of the table, you like dropped Pyromancer's Goggles and Runaway Steamkin, Mizzix's Mastery or Graveyard. That's a lot of stuff that I actually would associate with Storm. So I don't think it was that much of a leap for people that didn't have the full information to be like, oh, it looks like Tomer is playing a Storm deck over there. Because those are a lot of cards that I would think of as Storm cards.
Runaway
Steamkin, that's kind of stormy, right?
Doesn't matter. I don't know. I just feel like if somebody played like a Pan or Monocon, you're like, Storm,
get him
storming
get
off
him.
Of blink storm. Spells. He's gonna double Gary. It's like, I want to cast my big burn spells and copy it once with the goggles, which taps to activate. Yeah, I do. The slot storm. That's just doubling the value out of my game winning spells.
Or you could have just grape shotted us to death and we would have been none the wiser.
I could have. You never know.
Let's go back to the top of the order and do one more round. Tomer, what's another powerful card you refuse to play?
It's tough because, like, I don't have that many cards that I'm like, I specifically avoid in bracket three, at least. Bracket two, like, obviously, I avoid game changers. But if I had to choose one, and I do, you probably got me off Aura Shards. I was team Aura Shards. I do think artifact decks and enchantress decks. Oh, let me read the card first because some people might not.
They do
know.
Deserve it, but
Aura Shards. It's a 3-mana enchantment. It's 1 generic green and white, so it's Selesnya. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under control, you may destroy target artifact or enchantment. Similar to Grave Pact, where you could play this, you play a bunch of creatures. All the artifacts and enchantments are bye-bye, and your opponents basically can't play artifacts or enchantments until this Aura Shards is gone. I can understand that can be like a little bit of a feel bad at the table. I totally get that. I do think enchantress and artifact decks, generally speaking, deserve it, but it does kind of suck that it's like, oh, I'm playing like a random precon, and you've now just blown up all my signets. I need ramp, and I cannot play any of my ramp cards until somebody finds an answer to this enchantment. I get it.
Like Grave Pact, and, yeah.
So I'm on board now.
Yeah, like we talked about this recently, so I don't think we need to rehash it again. But it's kind of weird that back then we didn't just say, "Oh, it's like Grave Pact actually," and Dictate of Erebos and
play those cards so rarely that it just slipped my mind. But like, I get it. Yeah. I get the perspective here.
I don't like cards
like oppressive
just
things
one
that keep you down
at the table. Those are like repeatedly wrecking one player. It's kind of the same issue I have with like Annihilator Eldrazi, right? I don't like stuff that really takes one player out of the game. And I feel like that happens a lot with something like Aura Shards, where you have one artifact or enchantment player. And like, yes, those decks are busted. Yes, they should be hated on. But it just like takes them out so hard.
Keep getting locked. There's also big Ugin on our list here, the one that minus X's and then wipes stuff. This is also something where this can be on the board and then you say, yeah, well, I can cast something, but they'll just Ugin it. And then everything from now on gets Ugined. And if I don't cast anything, they plus two it and then they Ugin whatever I cast. So it's this lock up the board, which isn't stacks, but is kind of the same problem as stacks, is where you say, oh, I can't really do anything anymore.
Yeah, that's where I'm at on like these cards is I kind of find these cards are fine. Like I personally do not haven't had a really negative reaction to like an Aura Shards being played against me, because typically the Aura Shards hitting my stuff, I deserve it. I'm playing artifacts, like so it's like that's fine. I wish it wasn't a May. Like, I think that's a really good comment that we brought up before. Is like
so
if it wasn't a May, it would have to go away eventually.
That would be
that would solve the issue.
Oh man, that would just solve it. That's a good point.
Yeah,
although there might be an indestructible thing you could keep targeting, but still that would help. Yeah,
yeah.
No, but like, it's kind of weird how like back then they didn't use May this often, so it kind of sucks that.
Yeah.
They did push it a little bit.
Usually it comes with a downside. But yeah, like that's why like Grave Pact, Ugin, like they don't necessarily annoy me that much. Like there are cards that annoy me that don't annoy other people. Like it's just a bad preferences and expectations and whatnot. But like I totally get like that if it's annoying my opponents more often than not, I'll typically try and avoid those things. And yeah, like you got me on Aura Shards. Like if a lot of people just don't like playing against Aura Shards, I will not play Aura Shards unless it's like bracket four and then you deserve it.
Oh, well, hey, good man. I'm glad you came around. And I think if I think of Commander Clash, some of the most frustrated I've seen the table in general is when we end up with a board state where you feel like you can't do anything because of something on the battlefield. The games where it's like, because there's something on the battlefield, I can't play my creatures, I can't do anything. I just have to like sit here and draw a card and pass until someone deals with that. So I think cards that create those situations in general just end up making the game less fun for the table as a whole a lot of times. And I think Aura Shards can be one of those cards sometimes, as can Grave Pact, I think, that we talked about earlier. I think the more I think about it, I'm like, yeah, I guess Grave Pact could kind of cause that same problem that you guys are talking about. So
this one comment that always pops up whenever like anybody complains about like a card they don't like or they would like to see less, it's not just our comment section, it's like basically any time. And the answer is the argument is like, well, if you don't like XYZ, why don't you just run more removal?
Yeah, play more removal.
What do you guys think about that argument? If you say like, oh, if XYZ is an issue, why don't you just run more removal? What do you guys think about that? Because I don't think we've ever addressed that, the run more removal argument. That's a defense.
Depends on how, like, obviously you should have some removal for some things, but remember when we talked about Elish Norn, the one that blocks ETB triggers, and then we said, yeah, you have to run more removal, but if you're an ETB deck, so it's got to be non-ETB removal, so you also have to break synergy. So like 10% of your deck to realistically draw it if you need it, it's got to be cards that actively avoid your synergy just to please some people that say, well, maybe you should just run more removal. That is not a solution. It is just my reason why I just said, no, I'll just complain. Thank you. Just that off. I don't want to put like random 3-mana destroy something. That's boring.
I play Commander so I don't have to run more removal. Like, I think it's actually as simple as that. Like, but no, I mean, I know it sounds kind of silly, but here's what I mean by that. Like, yes, anything is beatable. Yes, you could play, have no ban list, people play whatever they want, the most hateful cards, and if you load up on enough counters and interaction, you can stop that thing, right? Humility is not a problem. Stasis is not a problem. I just got, you know, 10 artifact removal spells, 10 enchantment removal spells, 20 counter spells. But that just doesn't lead to the style of Commander game that most people want to play.
Right.
What I've seen from people playing Commander is people want to play Commander to have fun, number one, and to like show off their deck and do the thing they're trying to do. That's why people play this format. It's not necessarily even to win for a lot of people. At least for me, it's not necessarily that I want to win as much as possible. I want to do the cool thing and have the good time. And the more I have to load up on removal and counters to beat an Aura Shards, the less my deck does something cool. And I think that's a loss, not just for me, but for everyone at the table. Because I think not only do I want my deck to do cool things, I like when other people do cool things. When someone beats me by doing something cool and spectacular, I come away from that game feeling like, yeah, that was really fun. I'm glad I did that. But if I play a game that's just a 3-hour crim grind of like counters and removal spells and 6 wrath and nothing ever happens, and eventually someone, you know, wins with Nephalia round yard milling people out, I don't come away from that thinking, wow, that was like super fun. I'm glad I could have played standard. If I wanted to play one more removal, I could play some standard, I play some modern. So that's kind of my take. Sure, you're right. If you want more removal, stuff wouldn't be problematic. But I think it just makes the format less enjoyable if you treat it that way.
I also think, like, just because, like, let's say the Elish Norn, because this is a good one that I was more like also memeing on Elish Norn, but like I get it now. I still think the card is fine because Blink decks also deserve to be shut down. Just like artifacts and enchantress decks, they deserve what's coming to them. But I totally get the idea of like Elish Norn being very annoying for a Blink deck. Like, let's say you are being a responsible Blink player, right? And you know this Elish Norn is a possibility, and you run like, I don't know, 3 spot removal spells that are not ETB focused specifically so you can deal with the Elish Norn. The problem is that now you have to find this card that is shutting you out of the game. And how are you going to find it? Either you have it in your hand, and okay, good job, congratulations. The other way is maybe you could tutor it up, or you could draw cards until you find it. But probably those things are ETB related, and now you can't do that. So now it's much harder for you to actually find the answer. And then the follow-up is like, okay, well, somebody will have, like, amongst everybody on the table, somebody's going to have an answer to Elish Norn. The thing is, though, it gets more complicated than that, because now if an Elish Norn or an Aura Shards or whatever the thing is locking out a person, I have the same argument with, like, Iona, which I also changed my mind on. The rest of the table is not incentivized to get rid of the thing that's locking out an opponent of theirs. If they're not being a stacked out or like locked out of playing their cards, if they don't have any enchantments and artifacts on the battlefield for an Aura Shards to blow up, or they are not a blink deck, so they don't really care about the Elish Norn as much, they have no incentive to use their removal to help you out. And that's where it gets a little bit more tricky, because everybody always says like, oh, yeah, well, everybody's running three removal pieces for XYZ, then obviously somebody's going to get it. But in reality, when you're playing a four-player free-for-all game, not everybody who has the removal will want to be using it. And that's where it gets more annoying at the actual gameplay experience. It's not like, oh, everybody has a removal spell for XYZ, therefore it's never going to be problem, somebody's gonna have it. Well, it's like that. No, if it's not bothering me, why would I waste my removal spell? I'm gonna save my removal spell for the thing that actually bothers me. So that's where it's a factor that people don't consider as much as they should, I think.
Yeah, and it's benefiting you to keep it around, right? Because it's weakening one of your opponents. So as far as winning the game, it actually benefits you to not actually take out the piece that's doing that. So yeah, I think, I don't know, interesting topic. But I've been on the receiving end of the Elish Norn thing with the Panharmonicon deck. No. And I don't think there's like a great solution to it. Like, yes, I could play Demonic Tutor, Vampiric Tutor, a bunch of tutors so I can always find my beast within. But then what about the games when there is no Elish Norn, which is actually 98% of games or like some high percentage? Do I really want all these tutors? It's going to make my deck more consistent and lead to this play pattern that I don't necessarily want my commander game to be about. So I think it's easier just to avoid the whole situation.
Yeah, some cards, like for Elish Norn in particular, you can play like the Eternal Wanderer, which synergizes with your blink decks because you can flicker your stuff, but also you can minus to get the Elish Norn. But how many of those cards are there? And good point from Toma with, yeah, you want to search for this also without the synergy of your deck, just so you can deal with the one thing that's they maybe like, have.
I remember this is an ancient podcast where we were like reviewing the ban list. This is like 5 years ago. And I remember I was memeing so hard on Iona. I was like, why would they ever ban this? Oh, maybe the RC got ruined by Iona. And then I was it was explained to me being like, look, if somebody's locked out of the game and they have answers in the deck, how are they finding those answers, huh? When they can't cast spells in their monocolor deck. And if nobody else is locked out, why are they going to help you? You're the opponent, right? Like, so, and then I was like, okay, I got it. I get why it could be unfun. I get why these cards can be unfun. Yeah.
All right, Phil, do you have another pick? Is it your turn?
Yes.
I've lost track with our...
We got sidetracked.
We talked a lot about artifacts decks don't needing help. Or not needing help, and I do have one artifact deck that does not need the help of this card because it's a line that goes through all of these picks for me. It's too easy with this. So I have a Mishra deck, and it creates a creature token copy artifact thing every turn, and it is very disposable because it sacrifices itself anyways. And I have other decks that have artifact creatures. It's actually kind of easy to get artifact creatures. And then you cast Arkham Dexon. 4 mana, 2/2, tap target artifact creature's controller sacrifices it. That player may search the library for a non-creature artifact card and put it onto the battlefield and then shuffle their library. So you sacrifice an artifact creature, 2/4, an artifact card. It might be a little niche because it's like insane with Mishra because he's built around turning non-creature artifacts into creatures. But as I said, this is a list of cards that I don't put into my own decks because I would just copy, I don't know, let's see, a Soul Ring or something with Mishra, tap it, then tap Darkon, get Portal to Phyrexia. That's too easy. It's just, I don't need it. And yet, the deck is good enough as it is, and I don't want I do play Iron Man, though. Like, if there's a little bit of restriction there, but just saying, sacrifice something, tutor something, onto the battlefield, every turn, that's too much. It's too easy.
This card used to be so busted. I remember, like,
still
when I first
bucks.
I mean, it's still very strong. But I remember like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, like the earlier days of Commander, this was a legit, like one of the scariest artifacts. Like what you probably think of Modern Horizons Ursa today, if you're someone who has started playing Commander more recently, that's probably about how you thought of this card like 10 or 15 years ago, where it was just like, oh no, if this comes down in the artifact deck, it's so bad for me. The card's still very scary, like in the right deck. I honestly haven't seen it in quite a while. I kind of forgot about Arkham a little bit, but I think the card is still very, very strong, but it used to be so good.
I mean, I have a soft spot for it because it used to be a terror long ago.
So good.
I remember there was like a buddy of mine in my first original play group had an Arkham Daxon deck. It was his baby.
Oh, as a commander, right?
It's as a commander. And the classic way of winning the game with his deck at least was you Arkham Daxon, you give him haste with like Lightning Greets or whatever, find some untapper effects as well, and sacrifice like a mirror or something, and you get Darksteel Forged, the one that gives all your permanents indestructible, all your artifacts indestructible. And then the next turn, you find Nivinril's Disc. And you should be having some ways of untapping the disc. And the Nivendril's Disc is like you pay one, you tap it. It comes into pile, deal tap. Then you tap it and you destroy like all artifacts, enchantments, creatures. Like all the like non-land permanents essentially back in the day. And it doesn't sacrifice itself for anything. It just will destroy itself in theory. But if you have Darksteel Forge, all your things are indestructible. It was oh boy, that was good stuff. And then you lock down the table. Yeah, I think it's a bit too much sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, it can definitely be a little bit too much. All right. For my last pick, I'm going to do something a little different. So this isn't a card that I refuse to play yet, but it's a newer card. I've been thinking about this card a lot, and I think it's trending towards a card that I'm going to start refusing to play. And I wanted your thoughts on this card. The card is Ice Till Explorer. Ice Till Explorer, 4 mana, 2/4 from Edge of Eternities. You can play an extra land on your turn. When you can play lands from your graveyard and landfall, you mill a card whenever a land enters. This is a card that, for me, has just started to feel too much, too easy, where I think it makes literally any green deck better, especially if you're playing without any budget concerns and playing fetch lands, and you build your mana bases like I do with Strip Mines and a bunch of utility lands. This card just, on its own, is so good, and then you might accidentally end up Strip Mine locking the table or whatever with this card, but I feel like this is just, like, a little bit too much for a single card to do. But I'm curious, do you think this card could end up on the list of cards that are too powerful and that we refuse to play them? Like, am I on the right track here? Like I said, I haven't done this yet. I haven't removed it from my deck. It's only like 6 months old. But every time I play it, I'm like, I don't know. Like, this might be a little bit too much. But what do you guys think of Ice Till? Like, could it be one of these cards?
I put it in two decks. I don't know if I drew it on Clash yet. Yeah, I have it in Omnath and Necrobloom.
That makes sense. It is
a little boring how it's like a custom card. It's like, oh, imagine if a card just like did both things.
What if everything?
I don't know why it's got the extra land drop, or why it got the mill, or why it got the
It mills to fill the graveyard so you can play extra lands.
Why does it have to do all
of it? Your fetch lands double trigger. It's great in graveyard decks. It's great in landfall decks. It's so much.
I think the card is still fine in terms of like power level wise. I don't think it's like overpowered or anything. Is it a great engine? Absolutely. You could throw it into any green deck, like you said, Seth. Like you don't need fetches, you don't need synergies and stuff. It will still do fine. Obviously, it gets so much better if you're in like a lands deck, and that's where it's gonna usually show up the most. I think it's still fine. But this is probably the card that I hate the most in terms of design from 2025. Yeah, I think like the idea of Commander, something that I find very appealing to me and something that's kind of like baked into the rules, or like the intent is baked into the rules, is the idea of variety and variance. And like, I don't think this is like even like a controversial opinion. Obviously it's not written stone anywhere, but like, it's 99 card singleton. All the other formats were either 60 or 40 and had no such singleton restriction to it. It's pretty obvious, I would say, that one of the main characteristics of Commander when it was founded and one of the main appeals, I would say, is that it has high variance. You know, variance is baked into the format. And modern design, most emblematic with this card, is being like, ah, variance. No, let's just make everything ultra consistent. And this card is like the most emblematic of that. We're just like, yeah, doesn't it suck when sometimes you have a Crucible of Worlds so you can play lands from your graveyard or whatever, but you don't have that fetch land to constantly, you know? It's like, yeah, well, what if we had Crucible Worlds, but also it milled so put lands into your graveyard, but also you could play additional lands each turn? Why don't we just take three different cards that naturally you would have to find the pieces to assemble, and that's kind of exciting. That's kind of like the natural grind of a Magic game and Commander. What if we just didn't do that? What if we just put everything in the same card so the engine and the payoff is all the same thing? What if all the cards just did everything for you? They were all the engines and the payoffs together. Would that be better? I mean, it would. It's a stronger card.
Stronger.
It's a much stronger card. But it's like, it adds so much more consistency. And like one of the key aspects, I think, of the format that I think is exciting and fun and desirable is the fact that you have variance. The fact that games are so different from game to game. That's one of the core appeals to me. And the fact that they're just printing things like this, where it's like, no, we want to make sure that every single game is ultra consistent and you have the same gameplay experience every single time. It's like, ugh, I hate it. I don't think the card is too strong. But from the design perspective, this is like the opposite direction of where I would want to see design for Commander go.
If you know me, I love strip mind locking people more than just about anything. I think it's like one of the coolest things you can do in Magic is just use a strip mind to blow up all your opponent's lands. Still makes that unappealing to me. It's just so so
you'll
easy,
work
and you
for
can do it,
right?
So accidentally. But when I had to like find a Crucible of Worlds and then find a way to make extra land drops, so I need like an Oracle Moldai, and I had to get like three or four pieces set up, and then if I did all these things, then I could blow up your lands. That actually felt cool and satisfying. But I played this in a deck not that long ago on Commander Clash that also had Strip Mine in it, and everyone immediately started freaking out about the possibility of Strip Mine locking. And I was like, I'm just playing this for ramp, and I put strip mining them all in my decks. I wasn't even trying to strip mine lock you. I was like, yeah, it's just too much. Like it takes the fun away from it. I want to actually have to work for it a little bit to do the cool thing. If it just like does it by itself, then I don't feel like I'm like, it's not satisfactory. I don't feel like I really had to do anything for it. So
yeah, I'm sure like the intent here is just like, we want to make sure that every single time you play Commander, people were complaining that sometimes their deck doesn't get to do the thing. Well, what if we just made sure the decks always did their thing.
Yeah, always
did their things. Then you're going to be happier, right? That's better design, right? And it's like, yeah, in theory, people want that, right? In theory, I want a sundae for every single meal of my life. I want a nice, delicious sundae. But if every single meal is a sundae, now it's no longer as enjoyable of an experience to eat that sundae, the fifth sundae in a
really,
row or something like that.
Really.
I mean, it gets to that point.
Every time.
Like, I'll eat a lot of sundaes and I'll be happy, but like the first sundae of the day is not as good or is much better than the fifth sundae in a row, you know? Like there's diminishing returns.
Yep.
And so like eventually, like part of the fun for me is like assembling different pieces every single game. Just the fact that you had to work to have this cool thing happen, the fact that I had to work for it is such an appeal. That's what makes it the game.
Yeah.
You know?
The less you have to work, it doesn't feel deserved. That's kind of like all of my cards are like, I don't know, that's too easy. Like Nature's Will or something. Where do you sacrifice a green creature to tutor a green creature? Man, I'm blanking on a lot of cards here.
Natural order.
It's
also
the Lana Elf.
That could be on this list. Crater Hoof is something that I don't really play because it's just like so anticlimactic.
It's also like every single time people would be like, when Cauldron Complete got printed, everybody was pinging me. They're like, oh my god, You love this, right? It's your new favorite card, right? Luck. It's like, no, it's the opposite
point is
of
getting
what I
the
like
three
about
pieces.
Caldera.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah, point.
I had
the
to
challenge.
Work for it. If it just shows up on one card, then it doesn't spark joy. I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, I like the callback, but it's like, there's like the whole point of the reason why I like assembling Caldera is that it's difficult, is that I don't get to do it every single game. If I got to do it every single game, I get bored of it and stop playing the cards.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the whole point. The whole point is gone. And yeah, I feel like, I don't know, they definitely like, they workshopped it, they asked surveys, they'd be like, would you like your deck to do the thing more? And people say yes. Obviously, they say yes. And
yeah,
but then you're like, okay, here's the cards, they just do all the things for you every single time, so every single game will always be the same, you will always get to do the same thing every single time. Are you happy? And my answer is no.
No, less happy. Yep, yep. Yeah, I think that's actually
the
perfect
paradox.
Way. The perfect way to wrap up this podcast, because I think that really is kind of the foundation of a lot of these issues, is Commander is built on variance, and part of having fun with variance is games playing out differently every time, and part of the fun is it being a challenge. So I think a lot of the things on our list are stuff that are either too easy or too redundant, and those are the kind of cards that we tend to not play, even though they're super strong. But what cards do y'all not play because they're too strong, or for whatever reason, cards that are good but you just don't put them in your decks? Let us know in the comments if you got any cards like that. And thanks for listening and watching, and we'll be back next week to do it all again. So until then, have a spectacular week, everyone, and this is a crew signing out.